Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are less than 2 weeks away from the midterm elections. And tonight we are talking about election year politics in Maryland's governor's race. Joining us is Maryland's Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. Lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. He'll be answering our questions and yours. Certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Lieutenant Governor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Let me first get right into some of the news of the day. What is your opinion of this horrible situation as it relates to the bomb packages that have been sent to Democrats and critics of the president?
I mean, clearly it can't be described any other way than terrorist acts. And you can't tolerate anything like this. And I am hopeful and pretty confident that the federal authorities will get to the bottom of this and find out who is sending these packages, who sent it, if it's more than one person, and they'll get to the bottom of it, and they should be, you know, punished to the fullest extent of the law. But it is clearly unacceptable and something we cannot tolerate in a civilized society.
You are a Republican. You are a black.
Yep.
You are a black Republican in what some would argue a purple state. But as it relates,
no, I think it's not. More of a Democrat.
With a purple governor. But with that said, is it hard being a black Republican with the head of your party being President Trump?
Trump doesn't make it any easier, but I don't look at it as hard to be who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never did. When I wasn't a Republican, and I don't feel that way now. You know, the politics is different, but, you know, folks in Maryland have been able to see that there's a separation between us and what goes on in Washington. And if you look at our record, look at what we've been able to do, you can see that separation.
I think you make a point because, as I said, you know, earlier, Governor Hogan, is a Republican, but he is not a traditional politician. He is a businessman, and one could argue that the Republicans of late that have held the highest seat in the state are not the deep red Republicans. They are kind of purple. Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, what we've tried to do, first of all, when you talk about the governor and myself, we're not career politicians. This is my first elected office, his first elected office. This is the first time I've run for office. So this will be the second time I've run for office. So we, you know, we're just regular folks. And so it's not one of those things where we come out of a particular ideology. I think, you know, I could speak for the governor and myself. We're much more fiscal conservatives in terms of making sure your tax dollars are spent wisely than getting caught up into all those, you know, the social issues that often divide people. So, you know, we have been working to do what the people want done in Maryland and not get caught up in all the fighting and what I call the reindeer games that happen in D.C.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking election year politics with Maryland's Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. It's interesting that you mentioned regular folks. I want to play one of the commercials that is running currently, and then I want to talk to you about that.
I've been here since 2011. I ain't had no help since 2014. I wound up running to the governor. And he had promised. He said, well, you know, win or lose, I'm going to get him some help down there. after he won the election, he sent me some help. A lot of times he's here and nobody knows. We operate, man, off of friendships. It is what it is. You know, we making it work. You got a white Republican governor. Hey, he act like a regular human being to me.
A white Republican governor who acts like a regular human being to me. What does that mean to you?
I think it means what he said. That's Squeaky Kirk. His mother was a delegate in West Baltimore and someone that we met when we were campaigning and have been working with him. This is a guy that he and his wife took it upon themselves using their own money to reopen a closed community center. They opened that and had been spending their own money, hadn't gotten any support from the city or the state for their community center, and we've been able to bring private funds to help them build that center up. And kids come there every day after school and during the summer. There are kids there all the time. We've introduced them to the Powell Police Athletic League, and so now the facility is certified as a Police Athletic League facility. And so it's just, you know, something that needed to be done in the community, and we were able to work with them, and that's it. You know, so, and he sees us for who we are.
Well, that's, and I think that's my point. It just, it caught my ear and the ear of, you know, our new staff here to suggest that, you know, a white Republican is not a regular guy. Is that something other? It seems like an injection
of race.
I think
it's more the point that the stereotype is that, you know, it's something different, something, particularly when you get inside, you know, the city of Baltimore, same thing in D.C. I grew up in D.C. Same thing in terms of Democrat, Republican, and often, you know, black folks are told that they should vote for Democrats and, you know, the demonizing that goes on both sides back and forth. And so he's basically saying, look, despite what people said, you know, this guy who happens to be white and a Republican is just a regular guy.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Maryland's Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. Charles, calling from Prince George's County. Charles, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm a lifelong Democrat, CEO and broker of a real estate firm.
Yes, sir.
And I hear that the governor's proposing to ascertain that the dollars at the casinos would go one-to-one to the education programs in the state. And I'd like the lieutenant governor to comment on that proposal, if that is in fact correct.
Okay. Charles, thank you so much for your question. Lieutenant Governor, please go right ahead.
Yeah, that is a ballot initiative. It's number one on the ballot initiative, and it's to put the money, I don't want to say it's one-for-one, it's the money that is designated for the schools to make sure it does go to the schools. The way the program had been set up before, it basically goes into the general fund. So now it's what's being called a lockbox, that it is going to be for the schools directly, and any appropriation that the governor and the legislature puts forward is money in addition to this money that will be in the lockbox. So yes, it is to go to the schools and not just to get into the general fund.
Yes,
as it has been in the past.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Maryland's Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. If you have a question or a comment, lines are open. Stephen, calling from Prince George's County, give us what's on your mind.
I want to hear more about what's happened with Prince George's County Hospital Center. When Mr. Rutherford and the current governor came to office, they changed the amount of hospital beds that we have. And they also restructured it and took the cardiac center that we're supposed to get and put place it in Anne Arundel County. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we can talk about it because that's not true. And first of all, we don't have control over what decisions are made in terms of the cardiac facility that was put in Anne Arundel County. It is a separate board that makes the decision with regard to a what's called a certificate of need.
And but the person who made the decision was appointed by your administration, correct?
No, That's not true. That's not true. Some of those people had come on. Some people were already there, but we have nothing to do with the decision they make. First of all, Prince George's County Hospital is under construction. The Anne Arundel County Hospital is already there and is operating and serves not only Anne Arundel County, northern Anne Arundel County, and the Eastern Shore and some other parts. So it is a need, and they go through a process. We did not do that. Now, some folks wanted us to interfere with it, which would have been against the law for us to do that. I think you should do a little bit more research. We also did not reduce the size of the hospital. We put money into the hospital every year. It is under construction, and it's going to be built.
We're
a little bit more detail, and don't just follow the talking points of the other side who are just trying to get you to vote for somebody else.
Stephen, thank you so much for your phone call. To that point, when the new hospital is completed, because I know there's supposed to be a form of trauma center, but what about a heart center or cardiac specialty center? Will it be in the new hospital there?
They would have to. We don't have control over that, which I just said. They go through a process called a certificate of need.
Right.
Now, you can argue that you shouldn't have certificates of need because it does limit the amount of facilities that can go into a particular area, but that is the process that we have. They can apply for a certificate of need. What Mike Miller wanted and some others wanted to delay that so that the hospital in Prince George's County could get it. But, you know, they can apply for it, and we'll see what happens. But it's not our call, the governor or the lieutenant governor's call.
Okay. I want to talk to you about...
I want to point out something to your listeners.
No, please go right ahead. Please go right ahead.
That is that, just in case they didn't know, I'm a Howard grad.
Okay.
I was at Howard when the Daily Drum started. So I just wanted to point that out. And we beat your school last week, Morgan.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad we do have listeners other than Howard grads.
Oh, I know you do. Not everybody there, but it's the Howard University Station.
Okay, I appreciate that.
HUR stands for.
Yes, I realize that, Lieutenant Governor, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the rivalry too. We're all.
Well, I hear it much more. I'm around a lot more Morgan folks. So
yeah, okay. I'll let you have that. we're all HBCU. But speaking of education. I do want to ask you about the situation in Prince George's County with the audit. We know that there had, that audit has revealed that there have been problems with the accurate graduation rates in the county. We've seen the same kind of thing in the District of Columbia and in other parts of the country. Would you support a statewide audit of graduation outcomes in Maryland?
Well, I think, and what happened in Prince George's, the audit request came from members of the Board of Education.
That's correct.
The elected members of the Board of Education, as well as the delegation from the House, the Prince George's County elected delegation from the House. And so we responded, and I should say, before the delegation came in, the local NAACP asked for an audit as
but
well.
Do you would you support so one, though?
And we supported that.
I mean, do you think that every county school system in Maryland should undergo that same kind of audit?
I think what I was going to say, and I will say, is that if the local jurisdictions or those in the local jurisdiction, it doesn't have to be the full school board, like in the case of Prince George's.
Mm-hmm.
It was the three members who were elected. If they come forward and say that they want to see an audit of their system, be it Montgomery or Howard or Frederick or Allegheny, then, yeah, I think it makes sense.
Do you think it's needed?
Audit, I don't know if that's, fiscally responsible at this time to just do all of the jurisdictions, 24 jurisdictions in the state. But if the locals came to us and said, we're concerned about our school system And we think there should be an audit that's done outside of the county or outside of the city, then, yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Fair enough. Lieutenant Governor, hold on. I need to take a really quick break, and we want to let our listeners know that we're going to continue this conversation on SiriusXM, Channel 141. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're on the phone, please stay with us. Don't hang up. You will be able to hear the program. Lambert calling from Silver Spring. You're next. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds on SiriusXM Channel 141.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about some of the issues in Maryland's governor's race. We are less than 2 weeks away from Election Day. My guest is Maryland Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. On the line, if you have a question or a comment, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to quickly go back to the phones. Lambert calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I've been a lifelong Silver Spring resident for a very long time. I just want to let the Lieutenant Governor know that on behalf of Democrats, we really do appreciate Governor Hogan and Lieutenant Governor Boyd because they have done so much for the state. Regardless of my party affiliation, we feel as if it's what have you done for us. It's not about being a Republican or a Democrat, and we don't see Governor Hogan in that light. I just want to let him know that we appreciate them as for what they've done for us in Maryland. And come tomorrow, I'm doing my early voting tomorrow in Silver Spring, and I'll be voting for the governor and the lieutenant governor, but everything else, Democrat.
Okay.
As far as the governorship is, I'll be voting for the governor and lieutenant governor. Thank you.
Lambert, thank you so much. Lieutenant Governor, you're welcome to respond to Lambert's...
I thank you very much. You know, we appreciate, you know, the fact that he is going to vote for us and feel we have done a good job. You know, it's humbling to be in this position, first of all, and then, of course, to have people who appreciate what you do and, you know, the hard work that we put in. So thank you very much, Lambert.
Thank you so much. Let's go to Charles calling from Prince George's. Charles, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm calling back again. I called earlier and asked that got disconnected. But I too want to send out our appreciation. I'm a real estate broker and CEO, and the fiscal responsibility and fiscal practicality that the governorship has brought to the state is just phenomenal. And I just want to show my support as well as a lifelong Democrat in supporting this continued efforts that they are giving. You know, everybody wants fiscal responsibility, especially if they can bring the dollars from those casinos to the education dollar for dollar. That if they can bring that to fruition, that would be just phenomenal.
Okay. Well, Charles, thank you so much.
You know, it's like I said, it's referendum number one, and so vote for that, and it'll go through, and that'll set up the lockbox for education.
Charles, again, thank you so much. I do want to talk a little bit about one aspect of economic development. Of course, you know, there's been a lot of hubbub about medical marijuana in Maryland, first and foremost. And as you've seen, again, there are several states that are legalizing marijuana. Of course, we've seen what has happened in Canada. But my question to you, and you know this because you said you grew up in D.C., we are seeing an economic boom for marijuana around this country. And yet, many black men remain in jail, in prison, for selling marijuana. As this issue begins to change, from your perspective, what happens to those men who will remain in jail as marijuana becomes more legally acceptable?
Right. Well, we've already started the process. A couple of years ago, we worked with the legislature, and the governor signed our Justice Reinvestment Act. And part of that was expanding expungement for nonviolent offenses, which would include small amounts of marijuana, people who got caught, you know, possession. We are also, you know, getting people out of the prisons who've had these type of nonviolent offenses, and many of them are nonviolent drug offenses. So, you know, this has been something that, you know, we've been working on. Maryland is leading the nation when it comes to the reduction in our prison population. We've reduced our prison population at a faster rate than any other state in the union. And so we're continuing to do that. And like I said, through expungement for those who are out, as well as getting people out of the prisons, the prisons that we run at the state level, is something that we're working on. We make the distinction, and you know, you probably haven't heard me speak, and maybe the governor live, but particularly what I have said over and over again, particularly as we work on this, the heroin issue, is we make a distinction between those who we're upset with, who may have a problem associated with an addiction, which is a sickness, and those who we're afraid of. And the person who was picked up for having, you know, a nickel bag of weed or a joint, or was, you know, selling something to support their habit, if it was on the heroin side, we may be disappointed that they stole something from us to support the habit, but we're not afraid of them. And so we're not trying to lock those folks up. But the repeat violent offenders are the ones that we're concerned about.
Okay. What is the governor's plan, if any, as it relates to reducing the number of vacant homes that were part of the mortgage crisis? And I don't have to tell you just how difficult it has been for Prince George's County and Charles County, specifically, to recover when people just up and just abandoned their homes when they could no longer afford to keep them. It still is a problem all of these years after the crisis.
Yeah, we know that particularly in Prince George's County. Prince George's County was hit particularly hard with regard to the collapse of the marketplace, the real estate market, and it's unique compared to, you know, the issues of Baltimore, which, you know, we hear a lot in terms of their vacancies. Their vacancies have been vacant for years, for and decades in some cases. We've been working with our Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development to try to provide assistance, but also in cases where the mortgage was held by the state and the person, defaulted and they moved out of the house, they just left it vacant. We've instituted a program, and I can't remember the exact title to the program, where a young person who may have college debt can purchase the house and roll their debt into the mortgage, because the whatever is left on that's owned by the state is going to be much less than what that house in many cases is worth. And so we've been able to get younger people in these houses, because that's another challenge, is that a lot of younger people who are even able, they're leery of buying a house. And we want to make sure that people continue to see that as an investment in themselves, you know, being able to be a homeowner and being able to leverage that, and that equity that you accumulate over time. But through our Department of Housing and Community Development, we're trying to work with homeowners who are finding themselves in difficulty.
Is there a plan? Let us for the sake of argument, suggest that you and Governor Hogan win this election. Is there a plan to increase minority business participation this year, and of course have you know those minority businessmen and businesswomen, big and small, new and old, kind of reap the benefits of that?
Well, in terms of when you're saying minority participation in government contracts,
or any kind of economic development, yes, that too, but also any other broad-based economic development plan outside of state contracting.
Yeah, well, you know, with state contracting, yes, absolutely, and we about a year and a half ago, I headed the commission to modernize our procurement system. The first time it's been done in probably three decades, and a lot of the emphasis was on small and minority businesses and giving them the level playing field to be able to compete for state government or state contracts, and particularly to compete as a prime contractor. Because as a prime contractor, you get paid first, and you don't have to rely upon the prime contractor to pay you. That's one area. But in terms of development and real estate development is another area we've been working hard to make sure minority as well as the faith community, some of the African-American churches through community development corporations are able to participate in development opportunities in their communities, in the communities where some of these churches and faith organizations happen to be. And many of them are African-Americans, making sure that they're aware of the resources that the state has. For a long time, and one of the things that we found, and as we dig down into the bowels of state government, is that a lot of folks that are there have been doing business with people that they're used to doing business with. And we are, you know, shaking that up. It takes time, but we are shaking that up to make sure that these organizations, these developers, be it housing that they're doing. We were just over in Glen Arden with regard to a new project there, which has a substantial minority equity ownership in this project there in Glen Arden for housing. It'll be mixed income housing that's going in place, is making sure we're shaking up that old boy and in some cases old girl network to make sure that minority members, particularly those in the communities in Prince George's and some of the other areas, have an opportunity and participate and get the funding and resources that the state can provide. So we're doing it now, and we will be able to do it even more so than, because it does take time for us to dig down through the organization, that permafrost who's been there for years, and getting through to them that it's a new day, and we're going to be looking in much more detail and approving projects and making sure that you're giving people a fair shot to participate, which may not have been happening in the past.
I've got one more question for you before I let you go, Lieutenant Governor.
Sure.
What is it that you are most worried about when it comes to one single issue in the state of Maryland, one that just sticks in your craw that you just can't seem to get your hands around?
Well, I think some of what I just said is a concern that I have in terms of, you know, making sure, you know, federal government is huge, but the state government is a large enterprise that it takes time to find all the moving parts. You know, people assume that you become governor and all of a sudden people do whatever you ask them to do and they're all rowing the boat in the same direction. That's not necessarily true. It takes time to understand all the programs and the nuances with the programs and making sure that people are getting equal opportunity to participate in the resources that the state provides. And that's what, you know, may get me. Now, there are policy areas that we're going to explore and expand in the second term. Mental health is a big issue that we're going to be, you know, really charging away at. And that really goes in hand with the whole opioid and heroin issue, is the mental health side of it, too. But, yeah, making sure we get through the bureaucracy and making sure that resources are provided in an equitable way throughout the state and that everyone has an opportunity to participate.
Very well. Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford, thank you so much. I appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. If you're coming to Howard's Homecoming this weekend, just be careful. It's supposed to be wet on Saturday. So.
Yeah, I heard it's a lot of rain. I'm going to be out in the rain anyway, but yeah.
There you go. Enjoy yourself. We'll be talking soon. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Hamil Harris is going to be talking with us, breaking down this conversation that we've had with the Lieutenant Governor. A little mini reporters roundtable. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our talk about election year politics. Joining me in studio, Hamil Harris, reporter with the Afro-American Newspapers. Hamil, we got off the phone with Maryland's Lieutenant Governor Boyd Rutherford. First time he's been a guest on this program. What is your impression of what he shared with us during the course of this conversation?
The biggest takeaway, Harold, it's always a blessing to be here. He made the point that both he as well as Governor Hogan are not, quote, career politicians. Here's two guys who were political neophytes that became governor. But more than that, it was amazing the callers you had. You had two callers I remember, quote, lifelong Democrats who said, you're doing a good job. We're going to support you. And again, and then one guy said, what? We're going to vote for you as governor, but then we're going to go back to the Democratic ticket. But I think the biggest takeaway I heard is he's saying that, you know, it took us a while to understand Maryland, the Maryland state government. And he says one of his chief concerns, you said, what keeps you up at night? And what's your big concern? Is busting up that old contracting network where the same people get the contracts. And we know this is a state that's still overwhelmingly Democrat, controlled by the Mike Millers of the world and other veteran Democrats. And what this guy is saying is that, you know what? We want to give new people opportunities, equity, and things like that. So it's amazing in the state of Maryland, 12 miles from the nation's capital, that we're dealing with the change agents being Republicans. And lastly, he seems to have no affinity. He admitted that having a president like Donald Trump is something that doesn't help. But again, people seem to have looked at Hogan as well as Rutherford in a different light than their Republican cohort, President Donald Trump.
Well, that's one of the things, and I call Maryland a purple state. That was a mistake. I meant to say
maybe
that.
Maybe not.
Well, no, I meant to say that the governor and the lieutenant governor are purple in that, you know, Maryland Republicans, for the most part, are not like the deep red that we see in Alabama or Georgia or in you know some parts of the northern Midwest. Maryland Republicans, for the most part, have always been
historically,
they've been different.
Charles Mack Mathias, Senator Mathias, Spiro T. Agnew, who was the governor of Maryland, he was, you know, went to yes. be, again, there's a long history. Bob Ehrlich, Michael Steele, who was the first African American to be the head of the Republican National Committee. You have some deep roots in terms of Maryland Republicans in this state.
But I think the other thing too is when you look at this Larry Hogan, Ben Jealous, they're running for, you know, for the office. This isn't like what we've seen in Florida with Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis or in Georgia, Stacey Abrams and Brian Kemp, where they're really kind of polar opposites in one sense, but I think also you could argue that, and this is anecdotally speaking, both Ben Jealous and Governor Hogan, it's not that you don't like them. And, you know, politics is often, you know, you can talk about policies and things like that, but Hogan and Jealous are not unlikable.
And that's the thing that's interesting, because I saw Maryland state delegate at the gas station. He says, I like Hogan. I don't know if I'm going to vote for him, but the likability index, what Hogan has been able to do among the Democrats, and forget about the rest of, you remember, you only got Baltimore City, Prince George's County, a majority African-American, and that's, you have to win it or you don't win.
Yeah, like they say, as Prince George's and Baltimore goes, and
within
so goes
those
the state.
Two areas, in Baltimore County and Baltimore City, you have a very prominent group of ministers and black Democrats who are supporting Hogan. I mean, look at Alex Williams, you like Ike Leggett, Montgomery County. You have, these are not just anybody's. And so, you know, the rest of the state is going to go with, you know, historically for the Republican. But I think Hogan has been able to endear himself within the city. Some people say, well, he had cancer. We feel sorry for him. But we have ministers coming out and said, we're going to support him. And there's not a pushback. Where Georgia and Florida, like you said, there's a movement going on. And the question, well, Jones was supposed to do is reach out to millennials, young people, energize this base. I just don't see that energy. In fact, my 16-year-old daughter would say, well, you have to gotta go. We know what Hogan's about. I'm like, where you learn all this stuff? But we
She's
don't know.
Reading.
But again, we don't know what Jealous will do. And I just think that's interesting.
And I think one of the, you mentioned Montgomery County Executive Ike Leggett. He just said just a few days ago, I'm endorsing Ben Jealous, but I'm not going to campaign against Larry Hogan. Is that him straddling the fence?
It's a lot of straddling. It's like, and again, you see the fence straddling. Plus another thing, you have at Prince George's County, the county executive candidate, I mean, basically to be, you know, Angela Alsobrooks, other prominent people who you just don't see the face time. She's very popular. People think she's going to run for governor after, you know, but you don't see the face time with Jealous. I went to the Democratic Unity Rally. People show up, pop in and pop out. And again, it's Jealous in this, remember, it's only 70,000 votes that Hogan was able to win over Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. Only 70,000, where you got several 1 million people. Again, it's not that impossible for Jealous to win, but I just don't see that momentum with less than 2 weeks going into this race.
And what do you think are the motivating factors for midterms in Maryland? Again, this is not, you know, we don't have a huge social divide between these two major candidates. We don't have any ultra right wing, ultra left wing.
I think the biggest thing is the caller asked. It says that lockbox, basically, when Hogan says and Rutherford says that they're going to make sure that the money, that's the generator in the money in this county now is the casinos, that money has to go not to that general fund where money just ends up everywhere, but has to go to the schools. And most people want better quality education in Prince George's County. You mentioned about the statewide audit. Remember, it was Hogan. I'm sounding like a reporter. I'm just a journalist. Hogan was the one was calling on accountability of what was going on in Prince George's County. And Rashurin Baker, county executive, again, he didn't have a clear response to what happened with Mr. Maxwell, the outgoing CEO. There was a lot of criticism.
Yeah.
Talking about black-on-black political crime. So, again, I think people are weary, and those that supported Hogan are looking for change.
And you also remember one of the things that we did see, going back to the school issue, this wasn't just a Prince George's County thing, but this was also happening in Baltimore and in some of the Western state schools, where during this winter you had children that were shivering in the classroom.
That's right, the cold classes. Not just that. It is interesting to talk about opiate addiction. What did he say? The top priority going back is mental health.
Mental health.
And that's a big deal in Western Maryland as well as the Maryland Eastern Shore, where you have so many, not just, you have a lot of white kids and their families from very stable homes, not to say that our homes are stable, who are really struggling with this opiate addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Opiates. And so again, they're speaking to issues that people can grab hold to. And when you think about Jealous, you know, he's talking about, he has a platform, he has a plan. But it's something when they slow down and they talk, just like he said, hey, I went to Howard. You know, we beat y'all. Somehow,
they keep bringing that up.
But it's funny how I remember when Freddie Gray, the whole Freddie Gray thing, that Sunday I was up there coming from the Washington Post, and who was standing next to me was Governor Hogan. He was like right there.
But we have also heard, and we are going to be talking to Ben Jealous before Election Day. I've heard him say, he's spoken about it on this program, and we've heard him also talk about, you know, the opioid problem. He's also spoken about economic development. And so does it really just come down to, you know, they are so close in both of them wanting Maryland to be, continued economic powerhouses and the like, and to deal with housing and all of these other things. Is it really just who you like?
But it's sad, but it's almost like that because you need field generals. See, what Hogan's been able to do, and I'm still waiting to see what Jealous has done, but you need field generals who will talk to people who will respect from the judges. Like Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown is supporting, Angela Braceboy is supporting, Jealous.
Yeah.
You do have some people. But then when you had this campaign where you see these ads where you have all these blue collar people say, hey, like the guy that Sparkle or whatever, the guy at the community center.
We were talking about that tonight.
And the bottom line, they say, hey, look, we got a community center. The guy listens. And even they say, look, the white guy who listens to us. And again, he goes straight to the issue. And it's ironic that Jealous told, well, my dad was white and he's trying to reach out to, you know, this whole, but they paint him as somebody from another state, even though he was born in, I think he was born, but I can't remember that.
But I think that in the end, this may come down to
get your people to the polls.
Well, and let's not forget that because early voting in the state of Maryland ends 1 week from today.
Ends.
Early voting ends. And then, of course, you've got a few days and then you have, you know, Election Day. And so it, no matter who you vote for, we constantly talk about this on this program. Make sure you get out to the polls. I'm going to say, you know, my daughter, she's a student here. She's coming home with me tonight so that I can make sure that she cast her vote in early voting.
So important because voter suppression is real.
It is absolutely important. Hamill Hamill with the Hamill Harris with the African American News.
Harold
and Hamill. Look, you know, thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, October 25th. I am Harold Fisher. Harold. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Off tomorrow, Howard University Homecoming gets underway. We'll be back on the air with the Daily Drum on Monday. Stay tuned now for the connection. Good night.